Today in the studio, folks, I got a real treat for you. Mickey Mace in the house.
What's going on, Brad?
How do people find you on social media?
Dirty Goth Boy on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Dirty Goth Boy, boy is B-O-I.
Dirty Goth Boy, B-O-I. Folks, I'm sure you've seen this dude around. He looks like some sort of celeb. He's got the freaking tattoos going on. Like, where you get? I mean, there's some major tattoos. How long you been getting tattoos?
I got, the first time I ever got tattooed, I got two at the same time. I got letters across my chest and something on my stomach. That must have been like 17 years ago or so.
And how old are you?
Actually, I rather not say. I usually don't put
You look young, though.
I'm fairly young. I did a lot of things pretty young. I go like pretty hard, pretty quick, pretty fast.
But I mean, you got face tattoos.
I've been removing them for 4 years now.
Oh, yeah? Is that painful?
Yeah, but it's not as painful as living with face tattoos.
Hey. I've always wanted to ask, too, because, you know, sometimes you see dudes, they got the face tattoos, but it looks kind of fucking cool. Mm-hmm. You know, even sometimes you see, like, model-type dudes with the, you know, it's almost cool in a way. But how much, like, pushback do you get walking around with face tattoos?
You know, I think that... more so the pushback that I get, it's more how I allow it to reflect on myself. So I know, like, let's say before social media, before I had like any exposure, people or recognition, anything like this, if you saw me outside my element, right? Not in like certain clothes or not in one of my cars or not near my house or neighborhood or not coming out of my office building or something like this. And you just like saw me in like a neutral place, you'd be fair to assume judgment on me. Right? These are like fair things.
And yeah, but lately, nowadays, my assumption would be like famous. Why? Well, because the tattoos.
I can't tell you, my face looked like this before. I'm pretty sure before SoundCloud was even founded. So I was like a little bit before it was like more like a social thing, you know? But now it's more, the biggest effect I have is when I look myself in the mirror and I said, what am I representing to myself? And I look at a lot of like, let's say the tattoos are like scars that tell parts of my story or parts of my life. I'm saying I'm reflecting to myself things that I would rather have not have gone through. You know, like to see like certain, let's say certain tattoos, specific ones on my face that are maybe like negative or represent hate, right? I don't want negativity around me. I don't want to represent hate. But here I am every time I look in the mirror reflecting on that hate and negativity that lives so deeply in my heart.
Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Jersey. I lived in New York City for like as a young adult. Then I lived in South Florida for 8 years. And now I live in LA and Vegas.
And who are you? What were your parents?
So my parents were great parents. They're still together to this day. I was like a really bad kid, honestly. You know, like they always say, like, don't hang out with little Johnny. He's a bad influence, you know? Well, I was the little Johnny. Like, I was the bad apple. You know, and I knew that. I was always, like, pushing limits and doing the most, really.
What do you think caused that?
So, it's hard to say with certainty, but I believe now, looking back, that I had this, this like, aggression and energy internally that I didn't know what it was and I didn't know how to fix it. You know, when we're children, everything we're experiencing for the first time. You know, the first time we're happy, the first time we cry, the first time we have a heartbreak, first time we scuff our knee, whatever. So when I was first having these feelings, I didn't know, first of all, that it was abnormal and I didn't know what to do with those feelings. So I would just try any way I could to like relieve myself of this feeling, whether it be like screaming into my pillow or becoming violent or a fist fight or you know, trying to exercise, whatever it was to like alleviate this feeling. When I got older, I started to realize that I can harness it and I can focus it and I can use it to really excel in certain like specific things.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I got a brother. I got one brother, yeah.
How older or younger?
He's a year and a half younger.
So is he tattooed up?
He's pretty tattooed. I don't think he has his face. I think he has his neck. He definitely has his fingers, chest, stuff like that.
Does he have dough?
No, he lives like a pretty humble life. He's a professional paintball player and he has like a job. Like in the meantime, they don't really pay that well to be a paintball player. It's more like what he enjoys doing.
Yeah, it's just fun.
Yeah. So he goes, this is what I want to do. He goes, I want to just have my rent covered, have the bills paid and be able to go play paintball whenever I want. He goes, don't want more, don't want less. And he's content with that humble lifestyle.
Are your parents loaded?
No. When I was young, they had money. My family had money when I was real young. My dad ended up losing everything. And so now they just live, they also have a super humble life. They have a one bedroom house, like in a really rural area. And basically that's it.
In New Jersey?
In New Jersey. My dad works a 9 to 5 and they're just kind of chilling.
So at some point you got some money.
Yep.
At some point. They didn't give it to you.
No.
So how'd you start hustling and getting dough?
When I was born into the family, obviously, right? I was almost like from day one being bred into one of those people who believes a concept of success means money, right? Financial success is a successful life. So really young, the best understanding I had on what happiness would be and what success is came directly from your financial status. So really young, I was like hustling and whatever it was, because I thought that's what my family wanted to see from me. And I thought that's how I'd get like the acceptance and the love and like make my dad proud, stuff like this. But eventually my life actually took a really terrible turn. I lost everything. Not that I even had that much like young, but I was homeless for a bit. And
what caused that?
I had just like no regard for consequence. Like, it's just like,
how old were you? Like young?
When I was 15, I went to juvenile prison. I did a year. When I came out.
For what? What'd you do?
Mostly selling drugs and being violent. And that was like sort of just where I was at. I was like,
Were you a skinhead or something?
No, I'm Jewish.
Oh,
well, I guess
you wouldn't be a skinhead then. Yeah. Do skinheads like still walk around streets?
I guess.
Back then they were down there.
I think it's more of a prison thing that today, like the ABs and stuff like that. I think it's more like inside the prison. I don't think they fare that well on the street, to be honest with you. That's like a really hard strong stance to have in today's world, to be honest.
You ain't lying.
Yeah.
Dude, the movies like, I forget that movie where it was about the skinheads and remember?
What else?
Something X.
Edward Norton. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
History
X.
American History X.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think like, you know, way back when there were skinheads, I don't think there's skinheads nowadays, other than prison. You are right. I didn't think of that. But so I'm trying to place you somewhere. So like I see you with normal parents, brother, mm-hmm. growing up, you ain't got no tattoos, you're running around. And then all of a sudden, boom, you got your first tattoo. And then you smoked your first joint, something. And then next thing you know, cause like I had no parental supervision. So like I could end up with tattoos, but there was no one in my town tattooed up. Otherwise I probably would have. But where were you to start heading down the path of problematic behavior?
I found this group of guys from like my like county, we'll call it, right? Because there were a few different towns that all seemed to, they were like just the bad kids, really, right? So where I thought that I was alleviating all these like uncomfortable, awkward, unsettling feelings inside of me was like through ways of just acting out, like being wild, getting into fights, you know, like doing drugs, stuff like this. And I felt like that was how I was getting these feelings out so I can feel like more calm inside, right? More content with myself. So when I got in with these group of guys, they were all like 10 levels ahead of me as far as like being bad dudes, you know, in the area. So we all like just got together and like, we're really bad together. That's when I went to juvenile prison. I came out. I was always super young in like the group. So most of them were in like real adult prison by the time I came out, or they're like fully addicted to drugs or whatever it was. And I like straightened out for a little bit. And then like really quick, I just fell back to it. I still had these like feelings of like restlessness, irritability, discontented, and I just didn't feel good about myself. So I got back into it and then found myself in like adult prison. And
how long did you do adult prison for?
I did a 3 1/4. I served 3 1/4 years.
Damn.
Yeah. And
state or federal?
So, well, state and county. I did a lot of county time, actually.
Well, that's not prison.
No, I know it's not prison, of course. So state and county. Yeah. I did more time in county, though.
Well, sometimes, dude, prison's better than county.
So, bro, one time I'm in court.
Especially if it's LA county.
No, this is from the East Coast. One time I was in court and I was being sentenced to 2 180s, right? Running consecutive. So instead of giving me 2 180s, which is just a straight up year in county jail, I said, can you just give me 365 and send me upstate? Not only do you get paroled earlier, but it's also easy living. They said no.
They wanted you to pay.
Yeah.
What were you doing to get these charges? Fights, dealing drugs?
Yeah. I sold drugs like most of like my early life. And it wasn't that I sold.
Did you make money? Were you successful
doing
it?
Yeah. I'll tell you, in the end of it all, no. Like, in the end of it all, I was still homeless. I was still, I would never
have. Were you using them?
I was using them. Yeah, I was using them too.
So you can't get high on your own supply, dude. You ain't heard that?
Yeah. I heard that once or twice.
So you were making that mistake.
Yeah.
So you were homeless, running around with bad people, slanging dope. What kind of dope?
Everything. Crack, coke, pills.
Damn.
Heroin, yeah.
Heroin too?
Yeah, it was one of the best sellers.
See, when I was a kid, dude, I tried everything. Weed, coke, meth, mushrooms, and acid. And I'm like, what else is there? There's nothing else. And then people are like, you know, what about PCP? Fuck no. PCP. What about heroin? Hell no. You know what I think? The reason I never tried heroin or even wanted to is because I used to have a buddy named Jason. Jason Paxton was his name. And his mom was a heroin junkie. And we would go to his house after school or, you know, weekends or whatever. And she'd be in there. She'd be shooting up heroin. And then she would like look like she's falling asleep. And then she'd throw up. And I'm like, why would anyone want to jab themselves with something that makes them nod, is what they call it, and then throw up?
So that exact thought is why I wanted to try it. So I used to say, like,
that's why I never would try it.
It's like when I used to watch, when I was a real little kid, I used to watch like movies or whatever it was. My parents were in the room. I remember my dad would always say, like, he would point at whatever celebrity, like actor or rock star, or whatever, and say, ruin his life because of drugs, ruin her life because of drugs, her life destroyed because of drugs, he died because of drugs. So I kept thinking to myself as I got a little older, I said, what can feel so good that these people that have everything everybody in the world ever wanted, they've got it already. The fame, the money, the power, the influence, the fun, you know, everything. And they're still willing to do something that's going to ruin all of it. I said, I got to know it's going to feel that good.
Well, that's called crack.
You ain't lying.
But again, I was hooked on crack for 3 days. Mm. People are like, dude, I can't believe you tell that story. I'm like, dude, if someone doesn't like me because I fucking made a mistake, well, then fuck them. Like, I don't really care. At the end of the day, people make mistakes, but do we learn from them? That's the question. So now you got the big fancy houses and cars and whatnot. I'm trying to get up to there because
yes, I'll tell you exactly. So exactly what it was is that I cleaned my life up. You know,
at what point?
So I had been attempting to like straighten out for a while. So I'd have like short bids of like, you know, sobriety and positivity and wholesomeness. You know, I'd go 6 months, 9 months, the occasional 12 months. And the things that I would accomplish in this short amount of time were like unfathomable. And I was always chasing this concept that everybody I was growing up with was leaving me behind. I was like seeing my friends from middle school and high school getting big fancy jobs, buying an Audi, buying a house, getting married. And I just kept falling back, going back to jail, back to homelessness, back to broke, ruining more relationships. You know, all my girlfriends want to leave me because I'm just a maniac, right? And destructive. And so anytime that I can get my life together, I was just so hungry to catch up on all the lost time I felt I lost. And what I had accomplished was so much. And every time I ruined it, you know, I'd go back to the life. And so now I'm 7 years sober now. And this is the longest I've ever been sober. And this is like for life now. You know, I'm
cured.
I don't want to say cured and it's supposed to be one day at a time and all this, but I'm in a different place now with 7 years than I had ever been before with 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, even one time 18 months, you know, I'm in a different place and I got here from a different route than I did those other times.
Is that what they mean by you're never cured? Because it could be 10 years from now and you go back and they say, see, but I disagree with all that. And again, I'm not a psychiatrist, so maybe they're right. All I know is this, when they try to convince me that I'm an alcoholic for life. Listen, if I like hide booze and drink and, you know, have problems and I'm a drunk and then like I give it up. I'm like, fuck all that. I'm not doing it anymore. And I don't do it anymore. And it's been 3, 4, 5 years. Could I relapse and become a drunk again? Yes, but I'm not a drunk anymore. And I'm not an alcoholic. How? Well, because by definition, an alcoholic has to have alcohol and blah, 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 blah. And I obviously don't. So therefore, I cease to be the alcoholic they claim I still am. But they do that. I know why they do that. Because people will be like, oh, I'm better now. I can have a drink. And then fucking slide right back in their hole.
Yes, exactly.
So because they got addictive personalities. Do you have one?
I guess I would have an addictive personality. I've never really liked that, I guess, label. And I've never really like thought like to myself, do I have an addictive personality? But I can tell you that when I commit to something, I am fully committed. You know, so like if someone wants to do business with me and they're like, what do you think of this? I'll tell them straight up. I'll be like, listen, I'm not really that into it. And that's like my nice way of saying, you're probably not going to get much from me. Or they're going to say, do you like this? I'm going to say, I love this. And then that becomes my whole life. And I'm consumed by being the best I can at that.
Now, when I see you on social media, and you guys should go check him out if you're not watching the YouTube video so you can see what I'm talking about. And check out his Instagram, because you can see, like, he's living the life. You're living the life of, like, a fucking celeb.
Yeah.
You're rolling around. You're spending, I would say, millions gambling.
Yeah.
Well, I'm winning millions.
Winning tens of millions.
But still, you got to spend them to win them.
Yeah, yeah. So risking millions and winning tens of millions.
Yeah, so my question is, where'd you get the fucking millions to risk?
Yeah, so this is like a really cool part of my story that like I don't oftentimes get to dive into. So when I first started cleaning up my life 7 years ago, I was homeless again. And the short of it is basically my buddy put me up for free. He's like, you're going to stay in my house. I'm going to help try to get your life together. And I said, fine. And first he said, you have no money, you have no resources, all you are is a burden in my life. So you're going to work at my friend's tattoo shop, you're going to mop the floors, scrub the toilets, you're not going to get paid, but in return, you can live in my house for free. I said, fine. I didn't have money for food, I didn't have no money, that's what I did every day. I walked, you know, pretty far. I would walk from the house to the bus stop. I think he had like gave me $20 when I first moved in, the bus was like $1.80 each way. So I'd walk from the house to the bus stop in the morning. I'd take the bus two towns over, and then the tattoo shop luckily was at the bus stop. So that one was easy. Work all day, you know, whatever I had to do at the shop, get back on the bus, go home, walk back. And that's what I was doing. So I wasn't eating unless somebody was like giving me food, buying me food. I had people like—
This is in Jersey?
This is in Florida. This is in South Florida. Yeah. So the only way I was surviving at the time was through handouts. You know, somebody would like take me out to eat, or somebody would give me leftovers, or buy me a month supply of ramen, what have you.
You didn't have a chick?
A chick? Nah, man, I didn't have anything. I didn't have like a soul. I was like a lifeless.
I know, but when I was down there like that, in that condition, I just found me a girl.
I'm not going to say I haven't seen that a lot, and a lot of guys be successful at utilizing that, but that wasn't that wasn't my final journey. I was living in a makeshift box in Washington Heights, in Highbridge Park in Washington Heights.
So you were homeless.
Homeless. Yeah, I was living in a box.
I slept on the beach for a week or two, but that was about it.
Yeah, no, I was homeless. The last time I was homeless was through the winter.
For how long?
I'd been like on and off homeless for like maybe a total of maybe like 3 years.
Damn.
Maybe like the longest like single stint of being homeless, maybe roughly 9 months. This time I was like a little bit in and out. Like I had like the occasional couches to surf on, stuff like this. But really I was just living. It was shipping pallets. You know, there's like wooden pallets. This dude, his name was called him Shorty. He had robbed me in Washington Heights. Like we were on the block and he robbed me a couple weeks earlier. And I ran back into him and I says, yo, like, how are we going to settle this? He goes, I know you need somewhere to stay. Why don't you come check out my spot? You can live with me. I went to go check out a spot. And the thing with Highbridge Park specifically is all the homeless live on the backside, right? The like under the what was the bridge. And they all live under there, like it's like kind of makeshift shelter, stuff like that. Well, what he did was he went on top of the park, like where all the families are, like hiding in plain sight. He took a blue tarp and he rigged up using shipping pallets, like a box, right? He put mattresses, blankets, all this, like some insulation. I forget what he used, a blue tarp, and it was snowing, so the snow covered it. So it looked perfectly camouflaged, like a little snowy, like Knoll Hill. And the way we got in and out was through the back where the knee wall was, so people couldn't even see that there was an entrance there. So all day people are like walking their kids in strollers having no idea that me and Shorty were living in this box. And so I came from there, so I was like at my lowest point. I had nothing, no girl to latch on to, nothing like that. And I got sent back down to Florida. That my buddy Charlie was like, my buddy Charlie said if somehow I can get down there that he'll put me up and try to help me out. So I got down there and he put me in the tattoo shop and I was living in his house for free and I'd only eat when someone would give me something to eat, basically. One day I was standing with Charlie in the house, he rented the house, and the landlord came. Landlord's name is Sean Dolan, and to this day we're close, and what a difference he made in my life, both of these guys. So Sean came in and he seen me and he goes, yo kid, you want to make $100? And I was like, yeah, I'll do anything, you know, like, yeah, I need money to eat, you know? And he goes, paint the outside of this house, I'll give you $100. I said, all right, fine. I painted it. He goes, you want to make another 100 tomorrow? I said, okay. He goes, I need you to paint a different house for me, right? So I said, all right, fine. So I just started painting a house with this guy. I basically became a day laborer. I worked really hard. I didn't really know what I was doing, but how hard could it be to do demolition and sweeping and clean up dirt? He taught me how to cut tile. He taught me how to hang sheetrock. He taught me how to spackle, how to do molding, taught me how to you know, properly paint interior and exterior, take out and then reinstall toilets, sinks, all, you know, I started learning every day and it was just me and
him.
So
you're a fix-it man now.
Yeah, whatever it was, you know, all I knew is he was paying me $100 a day to do whatever he told me to do that day.
Yeah, but believe it or not, dude, that he was teaching you some valuable skills.
Oh, I just didn't know at the time. Yeah, man. It did so much for me. So what ended up happening was he took a contract with a sober living company, owned multiple sober livings, a lot of them. And the contract said, we want you to come in and just, like, you know, rehab the building, you know, repaint it, freshen it up, change tile, whatever. I didn't even know. It wasn't like relevant to me. I just, like, showed up every day, like, did what I did and went home. Well, at some point the contract ended and we, like, finished all the work. Well, the guys that were in the inside of the business, like in-house, right? They came to me and they says, hey man, we know you're trying to improve your life and we know you're, like, working hard, but we know you're out of work. Do you want a job with us? I says to them, I said, I don't know what you guys do in there. And one of them was Jeff Thomas. That's his kid's name. I mean, look him up. To this day, I mean, another guy that saved my life. He goes, listen, if you just work half as hard inside as you did outside, you'll figure it out. I said, all right. And I did that. And I just went, I just learned. I sat pretty quiet, man. I like to be alone. I sat by myself and just, like, I went to work. I did my job. I went home. That's it. But I noticed all these kids, my same age, driving Beamers and Benzes and Audis. And I'm like, what are they doing? You know, and these are, like, dumb kids, like, just like me. They were, like, the same as me. But they're driving all these cars and the Gucci belt and the Rolexes and... So I sat quiet and I just kept watching and watching and watching. I started to learn what they were doing.
Where would you see them?
Just come in. So I would be in there. Let's say I was, like, a basic level, like a BHT, a behavioral health tech, for example. That's like an adult babysitter. It's like being a corrections officer, but inside of the rehab, right? And so these guys would come in, have fancy schmancy meetings, coffee, donuts, shake hands, laugh, and then leave, get in their cars and go.
But they were nice cars. You'd be like, what the fuck's he doing in that?
Yeah. I said, if we're the same, why am I out here doing this while they're in there doing that? And I kept watching and watching. I started to pick up on what they were doing. And what they were really doing was anything that needed to be done, right? They stopped using their back and started using their brain. And I said, these kids aren't even that smart. I said,
I'm forgetting the bombs.
Yeah. I said, these kids aren't even that smart. You know, they're just, like, regular kids, right? I said, let me keep watching. What are they doing? They would do anything. Let's say, for example, this is, like, an example I had told on a previous interview when somebody asked me the same question, a similar question. So there was a time that one of the rehabs wanted to expand. So if you're going to expand, it's because you have too many patients. You have more patients. It means you need more things, right? So one of the things was you need more chairs. This is, like, the simplest concept in the world. So for me to watch somebody go to the owner and say, hey, during the expansion, we're going to need more material. We're going to need more items. Well, I know a guy who manufactures a lot of the chairs. He's going to give us a great deal. Do you mind if that's who we contract to buy the chairs? And the owner's like, I can care less. Regardless, I'm writing a check for chairs. What do I care where it comes from? Well, I figured out what the kid really did was he just cold called a chair company. He said, hey, you sell chairs? Yeah, I do. How much? Great. Can I buy it in bulk and lower the price? He goes, no problem. And just brokers it and make a sliver off the top. And the owner doesn't care no matter what. He's buying chairs, right? And it's like that for...
Well, the owner should have cared, though.
Well, the owner was like, I got a budget, call it, right?
No, I know, but that's not ethical in that position. Like, if you worked for me... Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, go get us some chairs. And I found out, you know, I could have got them $20 cheaper, but your ass packed the chairs $20 for doing what I paid you to go do. I would fire you and say, you're a fucking asshole.
But let's say the chairs were going to cost you $60 and I got them down to $40. No matter what, you're accepting to pay $60. I'm the one doing the work to get you the chairs. You're paying the same price. You don't
think
it's
fair?
Yeah,
I know, but I personally wouldn't have said, I'll give you $60 a chair. I would have said, dude, go get us some chairs for $60. And if you went and got chairs for $60, I would not fire you. But if you went and got chairs and you told me they were $60, but they were actually $40, well, then I'd fire you. But that's irrelevant. But still, that's smart. So you notice these guys were packing the owner.
Yeah, they were just hustling.
Were they patients?
No. They were guys that had also gotten sober. And through the program of getting sober, they just met people.
So it's connections, relationships.
Yeah, 100% relationships.
See? Relationships.
100% relationships, right?
I tell people, dude, you want more money? Shake more hands, meet more people.
Right.
Every dollar you get is from a relationship.
Right.
So you're watching these guys make money, and it couldn't have been that much money. I mean, how much were the fucking chairs?
The chairs was just one thing. They're doing this everywhere. So the owner, most owners in the industry are not on site, right? They're like not really relevant. They kind of put up the money, and what they want to do is just hire all the right people and just be gone. The substance abuse field is really challenging. It's really difficult. And I don't know if you know, but a lot of people have been indicted and gotten in a lot of trouble because it's so difficult. They're like, I don't want to do it this hard way anymore. What's an easier way for me to do it and still make money? And then they start committing crimes. So if you want to be like up and up, it's really challenging. You got to build a full team. So these kids are doing it every which way, you know? They say, hey, bring me on a salary for business development. They'd say, okay, no problem. Then while they're on salary for business development, they're making every side deal you can imagine. You know what I mean? So they're making money on both ends every time. But I'm just watching this hustle, and it just made me realize, I was like, if these idiots can make this hustle happen, anything could be hustled. You can just work really hard and work smart, and you don't have to lift a hammer anymore. If I can just keep using my brain, I can just figure out an end every time. So I just slowly started getting my feet wet, slowly. And I started leveraging. So let's say I started a job at $12 an hour. I'd go to another facility. After I started realizing what these other kids are doing to make more money, I would start doing it myself, you know, and not take more money, right? I'll just do it to be like an outstanding employee. I'd then go to another rehab center and say, hey, look, this is what I'm doing. And now I'd include these additional duties I'm doing, right? And I'd say, I'm getting 12 an hour. Can you beat it? Someone would be like, yeah, of course, I'll give you 15 an hour. I'd be like, great, hold on. I'd go back to my first center. I'd say, hey, man, for the same amount of work, I got offered $15 an hour. You're giving me 12. Can you match that? I'd love to be loyal. I said, oh, we can give you 15, knowing that they were taking advantage of me because I wasn't skimming off the top of anything. But for me, it was like sort of a strategy, like a plan, you know? They said, no problem, we'll give you 15. I said, great, hold on one second. I'd go to another company. I'd say, this is what I'm doing. I'm getting 15 an hour. Can you beat it? They'd be like, yeah, I'll give you 17. I'm like, all right, hold on one second. I'll go back to the first. I said, this is what I'm doing. I said, hey, this other company offered me 17. Can you match that? And I keep doing it. And then, not that it was necessarily all in one day. It wasn't like that. It was like, that was like any spare moment I had was spent like trying to leverage my position with another company. And the thing is, eventually company A is going to tell me, no, we can't afford that price for what you're doing. It's not doing enough for us to justify the salary. I said, no problem, because I already locked in the deal with the eighth company I talked to, you know, that month or that week, whatever it was. And I just keep going and going. But every step along the way, I just keep just watching what the guy ahead of me is doing and trying to understand how he's moving. I didn't go to school. I didn't have like a mentor. I didn't have somebody. There was no podcast when I was coming up. This didn't exist. Like none of this. TikTok wasn't a thing, you know? I couldn't just sit back and watch Brad Lee give me like this phenomenal advice on how I can change my life and become this successful person. So I didn't know what else to do. So I just kept sitting back and watching the people closest to me that were doing more than me. And whatever they were doing, that's what I wanted to try to do. I kept leveraging. Next thing you know, I'm getting paid, you know, a lot. More than I'd ever been paid in my whole life for anything. And I said, I basically acquired all the skills. And I'm still living like super frugal, super like watching every penny, eating like low budget food and saving. And then I just opened up my own centers. And then while I opened up...
What do you mean saving? Then I just opened up my own centers. Like there's a big gap there.
So there's a big gap. So
how long did you save for?
I think it took me 3 years to get my first one. Something along those lines. 2 years. 3 years.
But you saved up a chunk of change.
Yeah.
Then you opened up a rehab center.
Yeah. So my first deal actually cost me close to no money. So what happened was I found a failing treatment center. All right. A guy had opened up there was like a small partner. That small partner was a guy that I used to pull some of these like, you know, like hustle moves with, right? So he and I were on the same page. He was a small partner in another treatment center that had just opened maybe 6 months prior. It was failing. They weren't doing well.
How do you do well in a treatment center?
Well, you have to have, you know, a lot of patients. You can't be overspending. You have to be treating them good. And when I say treating them good, I don't mean like being nice to them. I mean, giving them like top-notch care. We're talking about human lives that need saving the same way. Everybody in the industry, all of our lives needed saving the same way. Almost everyone in the industry is sober now, right? So if you're not giving good treatment care, right? Good patient care. And you're not like really caring for their lives. You're not really helping them. Then people are never going to come. They're going to be like, I heard about you guys. You don't care about us. You only care about the money. We're not coming. And then you're going to go belly up. And also, you know, you've nope.
If that's they the do thing. Come, do they pay?
So most of it's covered through insurance, but there's all different sources. There's all different ways to get help. The government offers a lot of money.
Somebody's paying.
Somebody's paying. There is.
So they could make bank if they do it right.
If they do it right. But that became a big problem. To do it right was a lot of work. And a lot of people said to themselves, well, we cannot do such a good job and see if we make the same money. And they start cutting corners, questionable law breaking. Some people just broke the law. And then it became challenging to navigate as somebody who was above board. It became really challenging. You had to like, there was so much red tape now. And like the government was involved with every step of this that it was like, we all had to like partner with different, like, how do I say this like correctly? It wasn't like a partnership. It was like an open line of communication with different governing bodies, right? To say, hey man, the laws are changing every day to help create regulation. Can you help me with this? And together, they'd send over officials and say, hey, this is what you got to do to be correct and be within our yellow tape. So it just became harder and harder to navigate. But if you stayed true and stayed good, you had stayed rocking. And that was it. So my first actual deal came. My buddy had contacted me, the one who was like a small partner now. And we're just hanging out and he's like, yeah, you know, I own this treatment center. And he goes, to be honest with you, it's not doing that well. And my partners are kind of an idiot, but we're married on paper. And, you know, he's a majority owner and he has majority control and I don't know what to do. And I said, I wonder if I can help, right? I didn't know how. I didn't really know what the problems were. I just knew they were vulnerable. I knew they were weak. So he set a meeting between myself, him, and the majority owner. And I came in and I said, what is the problem? He goes, listen, let's be candid. I know you guys are struggling. What's the struggle? No matter what they told me, to be honest with you, I just told them I could fix it. I didn't really know if I could. I hadn't owned a center before. Before that, I was just an employee. You know, I went, that's it. Homeless, day laborer, rehab employee. And that was the top I ever went. So whatever this guy said, I was just like, my eyes were like stars at this concept that the owner's on the hook and he's considering that I'm going to now ask him, why don't you make me a partner? Give me some equity. I knew they were cash poor. I knew that they had no cash flow. They were struggling. So the only thing he can offer me that might possibly save his business is a piece of the business. He had no money to offer me. So we kept talking and anything he said he had a problem with, I just said, I think I could fix that. I think I got a guy for that. I think I know a way. I can do that. I can do that. By the end of the whole thing, you know, however many weeks it took for the meeting, by the end of the whole thing, he said, I'm going to give you a piece. And I forget my exact percentage. I still, to this day, have the contract. It was my first one. And so I owned my first rehab. And the only time it cost money, it was very minimal out of my pocket, was if we had to do like some quick, like cash calls. You know what I mean? Like, hey, like, we don't get, we don't get money coming in for 30 days. And for 30 days, our expenses are going to be like 50,000 or 75,000. Let's pool together. I knew they had no money anyway. So it's kind of a...
But you saved enough?
Yeah. Yeah, man. I saved like every penny. You know, I didn't even know what it was like to be an adult and live lavish.
How much did you have in the bank? Did you remember?
No, I don't remember exactly. Like
50, 100K?
No, I had more than that.
Not in the millions.
Not quite a million, no. But I had the most I'd ever had. Yeah, you want me, I can make up a number that's probably pretty close.
I don't know where it all came from because you went from homeless to day laborer, which you ain't getting rich there.
No, $100 a day.
To an employee, you ain't getting rich there. And now you got $100,000 to give them or whatever it was.
So when I was the employee, I was continuing to leverage my position while learning what the next guy was doing. So I kept offering more. I ended up getting
Were you setting up deals and middlemaning?
Yeah, I was doing all of those things that every guy above me kept doing. And when I got to that level, whatever the next guy was doing, I would do that. Whatever the next guy.
So it was lucrative middlemaning.
Very lucrative. Yeah. At some point, my peak of it, they were paying me, I was on W-2 and I was getting $500,000 a year.
Damn.
So it worked out and I just went hard and fast.
Damn, dude, you're going to expose the whole world to the fucking rehab biz.
It was more than like, just
this
rehab.
This is the first time I ever heard you can make that kind of money in the rehab.
Honestly,
game.
That's nothing in comparison to certain ones. But at the same time, I was doing more than just the rehab stuff. When I was doing it, it actually had very little to do with rehab and more to do with like sales and making deals. So when I knew that
who would you have to sell?
both. Okay, so let's say the treatment center was doing well. If I can sell the owner that they needed more locations, and then I was the one like holding on and harnessing a connection for, so to open up a rehab, by the way, you can't just like pick a building, like an office space, and just like open one. It doesn't work that way. The zoning is so specific and so particular that there's actual realtors dedicated only to like this, the mental health industry, right? So if you can get a hold of one of those guys and say to him, listen, I want you to be mine. I'm going to make a deal with you, and you can like really protect his contact. Like he was the plug, basically, back to like selling drugs, right? So if I can protect that realtor that I had, that was a plug for this region of the country where I was working, and then I convince the owner as we're building that we need more locations, and then I can sell him on that, and I could sell the realtor on using me and only using me and not like going behind my back, which that kind of thing happened all the time, then I'm making money on the real estate itself. I'm just brokering more real estate deals. And these are all things that were just like happening. It was just like every day, whatever the guy above me was doing, that's what I was trying to emanate. That's what I wanted to learn and try to understand and do it. So the bulk of the money came from like all of these, like, it was like all of these assets I was bringing besides like just like standard treatment stuff. Anybody can just sit there and watch a bunch of grown babies, like watch TV all day and not do drugs. It was from everything else I was bringing on the business development side.
And then, so when you got your way in, that one became successful?
That one wasn't that successful, honestly.
So you couldn't fix all those things?
I couldn't fix all the things. I think, honestly, I don't want to like not be accountable, but I think like a huge portion was the majority owner, right? The partner. His name was Ron. And he was like a real idiot. He was really difficult, really stubborn. He had been in the industry for like, I don't even know, like 30 years or something. So he was the kind of guy, you can't tell him nothing, even though he had a proven failure track record, right? But what it did do was now when I'm taking meetings, I'm not taking it as an employee or a hustler or a middleman. I'm taking it as the owner of a healthcare provider. So now I'm taking meetings with guys who own hospitals. I'm taking meetings with guys who own pharmacies. I'm taking meetings with guys who own other rehabs. And they're meeting me eye to eye, despite the fact that I have face tattoos. They're like, he got a seat at this table. He must be the same as us. And now I'm getting opportunities to have pieces of pharmacies and pieces of labs and pieces of whatever it may be. And we're all just working together on this. And that became like a real big step in my life.
And so that paid you the big money?
That paid me pretty big money.
And then eventually you had enough to start gambling millions.
So I hit a certain turning point in my life where I kind of just wanted to chill. The not so dramatic version is I stopped working. I just was like, let me chill. And I moved to Los Angeles. And the thing is, I'd always been a gambler. Like I gambled my whole life. I come from like a thick.
But you had a pile of money then.
Well, when I was young, not really. No.
No. No. When you decided to chill.
When I decided to chill, yeah. When I decided to chill.
Because don't you have like Ferraris and all that shit?
I like some cars. Yeah, I like some cars.
So at some point, like your money had to be invested to continue to make some, or do you still own the businesses?
No. I sold, stopped operating and just cashed out. I cashed out. Exactly. The word I guess would be retired, but it seems like such a funny word to use.
Especially at your age.
Yeah. But
a young age,
especially because there's so many people so much more successful than me that are still working. So like, how can I sit here and say, oh, I retired when I hit this much, but there's people with this much that are still grinding to the bone every day.
Well, so what you had parents and a brother who was happy with less.
Yeah.
So you had an abundance. And so in your mind, you might've been like, shit, I don't need no more than this, which is the same mentality as theirs. You were just at a higher threshold.
I can tell you that when I had that threshold, when I hit that point, I really hadn't been exposed to the concept of, living in LA, when I meet all these billionaires and like uber rich people, they live a really particular lifestyle that I hadn't directly been in before that point. So when I hit my threshold, it really did feel like all the money in the world. I was like, I felt like I must have been like Bill Koch. I was like, this is it, you know? And it was only once I hit that point that I started doing rich people stuff, you know? And once I did rich people stuff, there's other rich people there, but I found out there are really rich people there too. And then I said, you know what? Maybe there's more. And I didn't know what to do. So I was like, I'm just going to blow off some steam. I'm going to party. I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer yet. I just know that there's more. And I started gambling like almost like full time just as a degenerate, like just
what game?
I would play everything. I can like now currently the most money I've ever won came from Baccarat and the second most blackjack. And besides that, like the only other real big money game is poker or variations of poker. But Baccarat was my big money game.
Do you play poker?
I play a lot of poker.
Like big money poker?
Yeah. Yeah.
Against the, because I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of, once you're in that scene, there's the regulars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, you motherfucker, I know you.
When I first started playing like those like super high stakes, like private games, like the Molly's game stuff, you know, when I first started getting invited and entering into those, these guys that I'd like idolized as poker pros were just sitting at the table next to me, like just getting wasted next to me and like partying. And it was like this really surreal moment. And it still is sometimes, but particularly in the beginning. Yeah. Those
well, they're like, just regular people.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, they're actually almost like, in that regard, almost less than regular. Cause to be honest, most of them are like, just kind of like nerdy. Like how you say like non socialites,
introverts.
Yeah. Introverts. Introverts. Yeah.
Do you know Daniel Negreanu?
No, we don't know each other personally.
That's the only one I played with. But so poker, I mean, if you know, you got to play high stakes for it to pay off, right? Mm-hmm. So Baccarat, you started kicking ass and taking names though, cause you didn't lose all your money.
Correct. Yeah, I started.
So how'd you get so good? You just were good?
Well, I started just playing. Like, I didn't, like, think I was good. Like, I didn't even think I was going to win. I was, like, going to Vegas. I moved to L.A., and I was like, let me just hop 40-minute flight to Vegas, and let me just gamble and party and blow off steam and, like, get girls and stuff like that. And I started winning. Like, I'd go, like, once a week and win, like, 30, 50,000, like, you know, almost every week. I had losses also, for sure. But I was really just gambling, like, by pure definition, gambling, right? And then, like, this had been pretty consistent. And then they started giving me all these crazy things, you know, the jets and, you know, they'd like send prostitutes to my room. And
they would?
They would do so many things. That's like the.
So casinos do have prostitutes work for them, I bet.
So what they do is they have a third person. It's like almost like an outsider, right? So the casino can keep their hands clean. But the outsider will approach you and say, I am so-and-so on behalf of, wink, wink, right? Call me when you need anything that is off the books, right? And you can send that man or woman a text 24 hours a day. I'm not sure I ever had a request denied. I'm not sure I ever did. And I've asked for some pretty extravagant things.
So they wanted you to gamble pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of limit you got to be throwing around to get that kind of treatment?
So it started, like I said, I was winning, I don't know, like 20 or 30 to 50,000 a week. And then again, I did have some losses, but you know, like for the most part, I was winning, but I was just gambling for fun. And then I just said to myself, I said, I wonder what happens instead of buying in for like 20 or 30,000 and winning, you know, 20, 30, 50. I said, what happens if I add a zero? What if I buy in for 200,000? Could I win 300, 500,000 that week? I tried it and I won. I said, let me try again. And I won again. Tried it again. Won again. And again, I still had some losses. But I said to myself, I'm now risking and rewarding enough money that this was really worth paying attention to. And I worked pretty hard on studying my behaviors in regards to like how I handled the game. I know probably you want me to be like really specific probably. And I'm probably the viewers do too. I'm not though. I'm not going to give the details on how I stayed a consistent net profit winner in a casino. But I was, and, all the paperwork's out there, like all my win losses. Again, I've had some losses. They're all there. The wins, the losses, it's all there. The break evens are there. Executives have stepped forward and made statements on me, and you know, it's like there's no more question anymore. Like no one's even saying like, did you really do it? They're saying like, what do I got to do for you to tell me how to do it? And we just haven't got there yet. But I started doing that. And I started really paying attention and breaking it down. And when I started breaking it down and whatever that facet that means, I found a way to gain an edge. To simply put it, I gained an edge. And when I gained an edge, that's when I started winning. In the beginning, it was like $3 million a week. Then it became $5 million. Then it became $7 million. Then $9 million. Then $10 million. Then $11
million. A week?
Yeah. So the only thing
with that. You must have been living.
The only thing with that is that I wasn't going, when I was playing that big, I was not going every week. You know, if I'm going to win.
But still, dude, they were kissing your ass.
In the beginning.
Because the casinos kiss your ass when you take their money. They don't, people think they kiss your ass because you, no, I'm sorry.
When you lose.
Well, when you lose all your money and you have no more and you're not gambling anymore, they will kick you out and they don't give a fuck. It's when you're spending a lot of money or you win a lot of theirs, they want to kiss your ass so you'll stay and play it back.
Yeah, so when you're winning, they always assume you're going to lose it back, which nearly everybody does. And I want to like be really like vocal about this. I could not discourage gambling any more than I do. I'm like heavy, like personally in my comments. Like if you see me respond to my comments, like that's really me. And my biggest thing, my biggest like response is to people that are like, I just started gambling because of you. And I'm like, bro, please don't. That's not what this is about. Like you got to think the casinos are so much nicer than all of our houses.
They're going to make a movie about you.
We have some movies. We have some movies in the works. We have some movies. We're filming a TV show right now. I have something with Netflix going on. I don't know. I forget exactly how much I'm supposed to say about it, but thank you for saying that. I think it's like a really cool thing because I'm really just some guy, man. I'm just like some dude. And people find like so much interest in my life.
Well, that's because you're interesting. I'm trying to figure out.
Drop a bomb on that one.
I'm trying to figure out what the connection is. So like someone that might be listening that thinks, fuck dude, I've followed in his footsteps. Like what can I do to end up making millions of dollars a week? And it may not be gambling because you also, you know, you did well in business in order to get the money to gamble in the first place.
I would tell everybody 10 out of 10 times, don't ever gamble and work on business. Something I found. So I haven't slept in the last 3 days. I just got off a plane, right? So I was in Vegas yesterday. I had a fly to LA for work. I flew back to Vegas. I just got off the plane and came straight here. Tonight will be my first night sleeping in 3 days. There is no excuse. It is everything can be done and everything has been done. And everything that's currently being done is something that people said couldn't be done. When Elon was the first person since...
That's a good one.
Elon was the first person since 1979 to make any advancements in rocket propulsion. Since 1979, people said it cannot go further. The most brilliant minds on the planet said it will never go further. And Elon comes along one day and he goes, oh, I just made it better. And now he has SpaceX, right? Before 1979, people said it wasn't going to get better than whatever the current advancement was. And then it was, and 79 happened, right? People said we'll never go to the moon. We went to the moon. People said we can never colonize Mars. We're currently working on colonizing Mars. People said everything that's done today, at one time, people said couldn't be done. It is so rare that, to be honest with you, that well, probably you and I both, no, maybe this not so much, but I'd say it's so rare that most people will encounter somebody who will do something for the first time in history, right? That's rare. That means that person made history. And that's a rarity, right? What's not uncommon is that you find somebody who wants to do something that's already been done, but it's just difficult to do. And the difference between the person who has already done it and the person who hasn't done it yet is going to come down to their motivation and how lazy and how willing or unwilling they are. So if somebody has already done it, it means it can be done. You just have to do it. I used to work really long days. I didn't celebrate birthdays. I didn't celebrate holidays. I didn't have like much family to speak of. I didn't have vacations, right? And then I'd have a friend whose whole life was, I can't wait for Friday and go to the club. I can tell you that I know where those types of guys are today and I know where I am today. Their willingness to not go to the club and like prey on some pussy and instead to work really late, work from their house, work from their car, work wherever they are, think, study on themselves, study whatever they want to do. Their willingness was different than mine. And today I'm sitting here on camera while the rest of them are watching me here.
Well, that's work ethic and discipline. Yeah. 'Cause again, it takes discipline to consistently do anything that's uncomfortable. But also, dude, I sense that you're also smart. You're not an idiot. There's some people that are just stupid. Like they wouldn't have noticed those things. They wouldn't have said, hey, wait a minute. All you motherfuckers are doing is middlemaning that shit, and I could do that shit. Like they wouldn't even have recognized it. They would have been sitting there collecting their $10 an hour.
Waiting for Fridays.
So if you're one of those people right now waiting for Friday... Yeah, that should be a fucking title to something. Waiting for Friday. What would you say to him?
I would say you're going to wait for Friday for the rest of your life, but every Friday comes and it goes the same way.
So what should they do?
Friday is not a relevant day. As a matter of fact, I find Mondays to be my favorite day of the week because all the work that I did on Saturday and Sunday, I can finally put into motion on Monday when the rest of the people that were waiting for Friday get back into the office and can help me make my money.
Yeah, because you work Saturday and Sunday.
The days aren't even relevant.
It's just every day. What else would you tell them? What if there's someone out there struggling? They got a little startup business. They're trying to get past. They don't know how to scale. Shit's not going well. All this inflation and recession talk. People are getting scared. What would you tell them?
There is a solution to every problem. Every single problem has a solution.
And you know, if there isn't a solution, it's no longer a problem.
That's right.
It becomes a fact.
That's right. That's right. You know, Shia LaBeouf recently, I love this little clip of him. I think he did an interview recently. It's pretty viral. He goes, I know in the end, everything's going to be all right. And if it's not all right, that means it's not the end yet. I have encountered more times than I'll ever even be able to remember where I was in a moment in my life where I said, this is the end. This is how it ends. This is the failure now. This is where it will not continue. It's over. This is permanence now. This is as permanent as a tattoo on my face. But the thing was, it actually never was. Every time it worked itself out, if I just kept on keeping on, it worked itself out 100% of the time. Whether it was the way I wanted or the way I thought or the way I saw it, that's a different question. But the fact is, it always worked itself out.
Do you know Shia LaBeouf?
I don't.
Do you know celebrities?
I know. I have an experience with Shia LaBeouf. We're not like friends. We don't like call each other. But as far as celebrities go, more or less, I would basically all of them. Yeah.
You would like because you're at the same parties or.
I think I have a little theory about levels of people's lives. My theory is sort of stems from the concept that it's lonely at the top. Right. So if there can only be one person who is the best at something. For example, if you want to say that Kobe was the best NBA player there was. To be compatible with someone means you have to be like-minded, which means he can't hang out with people in the NBA because they're not like-minded. They are below him if he is the best. So who is like-minded? Who is similar? Who is compatible with him? Other people that are the best, which means he now has to go to the NFL and find the best NFL player. Right. And that's just two of them. Then the two of them say, well, we want more people in our friend group. So what are we going to do now? Okay. We're going to go to the PGA. Who's the best in the PGA? And they're going to go on and so forth into all these different industries around the world. So when you're at the top, it's lonely at the top, but there are many tops. So I think everybody falls into a category. Like it's like get in where you fit in. You know what I mean? So if you're, for example, a gangbanger and you're living, let's say, below the poverty line, all the people around you are also going to be gangbangers living below the poverty line. But if you're in a position where you are the best at something or you're in the middle, right? You're in the middle. Everybody around you is also roughly going to be in the same tier as you. So I think I wouldn't say that I'm like the best at everything that's ever existed, like obviously, right? But I think where I fall on my best there is category, there are other people in other categories that are on the same level of best there is. And a lot of those people happen to be the best there is publicly, including a lot of celebrities, whether it be athletes or actors or actresses or producers or singers or rappers or what have you. We're compatible. We're like-minded. So we get along. We find ourselves in the same tier.
I know, but you got to run into each other in the first place.
Like more like really how it happened is they've all just DM'd me. Like almost everybody.
They just DM you.
Yeah.
But you're not throwing kick-ass lavish parties or...
So I throw... Yeah, you know, I've met celebrities all types of ways. I throw really wild parties. Yeah, I do. And...
LA?
Every city I'm in.
Who's the most famous person that ever was at your party just getting fucking down?
I don't know. I had like a pretty cool... How do I say? It's not like that it's cool that it happened, but like looking back, the story's kind of cool. Do you remember like 2 years ago, the scandal where it was alleged Bryce Hall cheated on Addison Rae with another porn star while at a party in Vegas?
I did. I don't, but
yeah, it was like a
Bryce
big,
Hall.
He's a like a TikToker, Instagrammer, influencer, right? He's like a, in that world.
Younger generation.
I'm an old dog. Yeah, in the younger generation, he's like a top dog in the influencer.
Is he the one that wanted to fight people?
He did. He did the celebrity boxing. He fought Austin McBroom from the A's family.
Oh yeah, yeah. Was he the one that won or no?
He did not win that fight. But there was
one. I think it was Bryce Hall and that kid, and that one of them got their ass whooped.
Bryce did not win that fight.
Huh?
Bryce didn't win that fight.
So does he still box or no?
I think he does. I think he recently had something. Don't quote me on that, but I think he does.
So you ran into him at a party?
So yeah, so I threw this party. It lasted 7 days. It was a very expensive party I threw, but it was a lot of fun. It cost me $100,000 per 24 hours that I threw this party, and it lasted 7 days. And what happened was, I just like told like all my friends, like, hey, let's just party. Let's just have a good time. Like invite some girls. Let's have a good time. A lot of my male friends are in the adult film industry. So a lot of the girls that they invited were like adult film stars. And what comes with those girls is like, not that this was the plan, we're just partying. It was a lot of those girls also like occasionally see some like A-list, you know, celebrities. So then they'll contact these people and be like, yo, I'm at some crazy party. It's pretty lit. You might want to fly to Vegas right now and come check it out. And then all of a sudden they would come and they'd call their other celebrity friends and like, come. Next thing you know, it's like, you know, like a star-studded party. And this is like basically before I had social media. So when I first met a lot of them, to be honest, and I mean this respectfully, I actually didn't know who a lot of them were. I just wasn't in the world. I just didn't know. And, but there was this big like tabloid scandal where it was alleged that while Bryce and Addison Rae were dating, that he had cheated on her with a porn star at some party in Vegas, and that they were referring to me and my party. And all the clips that were in the tabloids of Bryce speaking on it were actually a conversation. It was me and him in every clip. I just didn't really have social media, so I was like a non-player, you know, in the scene. But it was him and I talking, and in real life, just so you know, I forget exactly what the tabloids did. He was like, I have a girl, I'm not interested in other girls. But they like took the conversation out of context and like made it out to be this whole thing. But that was like a pretty cool one because it was before social media was relevant in my life.
Well, now it's big. How many followers you got?
On Instagram, I have like 300,000. Not a lot.
Well, you're going to get a whole bunch more. Bomb Squad is going to go follow you. By the way, yeah. At Dirty Goth Boy. Boy is spelled B-O-I. B-O-I. Dude, where do you live?
I live mostly LA, but I have a house here too. LA.
Okay, so you'll be in and out of town because I got to get you back for an episode two. Mm-hmm. It's too good. You got too many stories. So you're still doing well though. You haven't crashed. You still got dough.
So I've had, I guess the question that I crash has multiple parts. Like, how do I feel on the inside? Right. And on the inside, what I found was, I actually left behind when I stopped working full time. I left behind like some of my greatest assets and tools. And like, so like 2 years go by at this point where we are now today. I've had social media for 2 years. And I look back now and I say to myself, like, am I still the person that I had worked so hard to become? And I think I left like a lot of my best assets behind. And so currently what I'm doing.
Assets or traits?
Well, if the trait's positive, it's still an asset. But I guess
granted. Yeah. But I'm trying to figure out what you mean by assets, like not physical things.
No, not physical things, like traits. Yeah, yeah. Like assets to character, traits, positive traits. Yeah. I had like certain tools like within my being that I had left behind. And it took me 2 years and I looked back and I was like, where did I go? And where are these things that I prided myself so much on? And so now I'm working back on that. And something I did to help me was I started this brand. It's called Shaken Hearts. And that's also on Instagram. It's Shaken Hearts. And what we're doing is for free, we're helping everybody struggling with drug addiction, gambling addiction, alcoholism, eating disorders, mental health like depression, anxiety. And this is like to everybody, whether they have money, don't have money, resource, don't have resource, whatever level of problem they have, everything is already covered. This is on me. I already did this. We're already live. We're already helping. We're like active. All you have to do is go to the Instagram, send a DM and basically like say like what your current issue is, what help you're looking for. And it's not like just because you request it, you're going to get it. Like I have people say, oh, can you just pay my rent? And I'm like, well, what are you going to do next month? This is not really beneficial. But I offer other things, and I've partnered with so many companies around the country just to offer help. And I found that this does two things. One, it forces me to reconnect with this concept of trying just to help people, right? And my own sobriety and my own recovery. And the second thing is it's helping me sharpening those tools again. Now that I'm being more active, I'm talking to all these companies all over the country and working on building out this whole thing. It's forcing me to like resharpen those tools. And so I'm really grateful for that. And I'm able to help a lot. So it works. One hand's washing the other.
Now, Mickey is M-I-K-K-I. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a real name or is that a like a Nikki Six name?
Yeah, it's like a Nikki Six name. So when I was born, my name was Mordechai. And my parents said, we have to Americanize it. So they made it Michael. And the translation from Michael back in Hebrew is Mikhail. So when you have like Mikhail as your name, you can go either Mikey or Mickey. And I went Mickey, and Mikhail is spelled like M-I-K-A-E-L. And when I was really young, I wanted to be a porn star. Like, that's what I wanted. Like, when I was in high school, that was my, like, low-key, that was my dream, right? So I, like, would fantasize. I'd be like, oh, I need a stage name. Like Dirt, what's it? Dirt Diggler, right? Like, I need, like, a cool name with, like, the lights and all this. And so Mickey made, I chose Mickey. Like, made sense just because it was, like, basically my name. And I said, well, I need a last name. And I just came up with Mickey Mace. You know, it was, like, a cool play. And this was when I was still a minor. And then I started like getting heavy into like crime and gangbanging and selling drugs. And I said, well, I guess now's a good time to implement a nickname. And then it just basically stuck for the rest of my life.
Have you ever done porns?
Yeah, of course. I've done plenty. Yeah, I've done a lot.
You have?
Yeah.
Are they out there?
They're definitely out there for sure. And once in a while I'll have a fan. So I'm not like a real porn star. You can't like search my name and like porn comes up. But any of the girls that I've shot porn with, if you search their name, you can find the videos with me in them. So I have like fans.
You doing them?
Yeah. So I have fans every once in a while will screen record and send it to me and say, looking good, bud. You know, and I'm like, yeah, you know.
Dude, they're going to make a movie about you if they, yeah. I guarantee you. If they don't, dude, like I said, let me figure out how to get that accomplished. That'd be a hell of a movie. It'd be like Wolf of Wall Street meets, what's another one? What would you say it would be like? Wolf of Wall Street type. Fucking debauchery.
When I picture like what whenever people ask me about a movie about my life, the first thing I picture is like the beginning of my life looking similarly to the movie White Boy Rick. So I think that it would be like a little mixture of that. A lot of my life was not like the glam and the shine and the happiness that it is today. You know, I had a lot of struggles and a lot of dark times in my life. So I think that there's no way to avoid that in the movie.
Well, that's what the movie would be about.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be about you fucking rolling dice, but, you know, eventually it would get to that.
Yeah.
But what else? Dude, there's just a million questions. I'm going to save it for part two.
Yeah, sure.
Is there anywhere or anything you want them to do for you other than go to Shaken Heart if they got a problem? Or if they know someone with a problem, send them to Shaken Heart.
Yeah, Shaking Hearts, for shaking sure, hearts. Plural. Yeah, for sure. I do appreciate that 100%. If you're struggling, if you need someone to talk to, you need an outlet, you need a resource, or a loved one, or someone you know, please go to Shaking Hearts. It's better to try to help someone today than have to say goodbye to them tomorrow. And other than that, definitely like check out my socials. Honestly, I post really cool content. I have a lot of fun with my content, man. If you're on my Instagram, go watch my stories. I don't make a lot of hard posts. But I have a lot of fun, and I try to showcase that. I try to just, I don't want to encourage people to gamble. I don't want people to think that my personality is made up of just having money now. I use my money and whatever, this freedom I've built, to just live my favorite parts of life. I dirt bike all the time, BMX, skateboard, hang out, you know, and just travel. And I try to showcase that in my social media.
Dude, so go follow him on social media at Dirty Goth Boy. Tell part two, keep that shit real.
Dropping bombs with the real Bradley. Subscribe now.